project management tools aren't an exciting part of our job. I know that this is pretty dry stuff I'm talking about here, but this is where the organization helps that creativity move forward in such a profound way. And it's that sort of small thing you forget about and take for granted because it's there every day. But when you step back and you look at everything, it's a substantial part of the process.
Hey, welcome to the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast on the EdUp Experience Podcast Network.
This is a show dedicated to helping higher ed marketers tell better stories, create better content, and enroll more students. My name's John Azzoni. I'm the founder at Unveiled, and we're a video production company working specifically with college marketing teams to make it easy for them to scale up and even automate their student and alumni success stories through our subscription approach. And you can learn more about that at unveiled.tv, and that's UNVEILD.TV. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, go ahead and subscribe. We'd love to have you. And if you're wanting your college or university's content to resonate on a deeper emotional level with prospective students, with alumni, with parents, whatever, I want you to subscribe to my free newsletter. Every week I send out tips and insights on creating more emotionally resonant content, including examples and best practices from other institutions, articles and blog posts, that week's podcast episode, and much more. So head over to unveiled.tv/newsletter and sign up. All right, let's get on with the show. My guest today is Kristen Nichols. Kristen is a higher education marketing professional with a wealth of experience spanning over 20 years. And throughout her career, she has worked at several top-tier institutions in the Northeast region. Kristen's skills in marketing research, brand development, digital strategies, and enrollment marketing have made a lasting impact on the industry. So, Kristen, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks, John. It's good to see you.
Yeah. So I know about you through Chris Raposo. I saw that you were on his podcast somewhat recently. Yes. So he speaks very, very highly of you. So tell me a little bit about, for people that know you or don't you, tell me something that people might be surprised to know about you.
Well, I this isn't something I've shared widely, but just outside higher ed. I penned a children's book, and I'm in the process of trying to get that published right now. So it's a long process. I had no idea how long it would take to actually birth a book, but I'm trying to do that. So that's kind of what I'm doing in my off time.
That's really cool. This is my favorite question to ask people, because I learned so much fun stuff about people. So tell me what's the children's book about?
I won't share a ton, I will share this, that it is a book for newer readers. So it's going to be, it's looking like it's a first chapter type of book. And it is centered around inclusion and community.
And
from the perspective of a tree.
Okay. Awesome. Well, that's so cool. That's really special. Thanks for sharing that. All right. So let's just kick it off, broadly. Tell me a little bit about your background, and like how you got to where you are today, and then we'll jump into our official questions.
Yeah. So, I just had a great undergraduate experience at Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts, which is a small public institution out in the Berkshire Mountains of Western Mass. And, was a communications major and just thought, like, what do I want to do with my life? And I was a campus leader in a lot of different ways. I was in a sorority. I was in student government, had a radio show. So I decided that working for a college would probably be a good fit. And I've done that ever since. So really, I had one short stint at a food company when I was like 22. But aside from that, I've been working in higher education ever since. And it sincerely is my passion, as lame or dorky as that is. I don't really want to market for anything else. So worked for a variety of different institutions, like in the greater Boston area, and also did a small stint down in Washington, D.C. when I was younger at the Catholic University of America. Mm-hmm. And started out in traditional undergraduate admissions, but as I kind of navigated things, I really wanted to get back to communications in my undergrad major. So made the pivot to enrollment marketing first, then started doing some digital marketing and market research and brand initiatives in recent years. And I just love it.
Cool. Awesome. So today we're talking about this project management tool that you implemented at UMass Lowell, and how it kind of united the campus, facilitated like cross pollination between other departments, and things like that, and really improved a lot of things about the content creation. So tell me, what was the tool? Tell me about how that and like how it differed from the setup maybe that you had at a previous university.
Yeah. So I've actually implemented project management systems at three different institutions. I've successfully implemented them twice. I can say that there was one time, and I'll talk a little bit about that as well, where there just wasn't adoption. People just really didn't want to do it. I've used different tools. They're all very similar, you know, Reich, Basecamp. I found Trello because I'm a color person. I really, the color displays on Trello, I sort of gravitate towards, but really, I think it doesn't matter what the tool is, as long as there is agreement and buy-in from the people who are going to be using it, you can use any one of these. And those are just a sample. I know there's Monday, there's a lot of different project management tools out there. I implemented what I was using at Bentley University when I left in 2014. I then went to UMass Lowell and sort of implemented something similar. But Bentley was not using the same PM tool. So Lowell chose a different PM tool. And they were very, although the basis was there, the project management setup was different because they're very different institutions. Mm-hmm. So Bentley, for those of you who are not familiar with Bentley University, it's a medium-sized school located right outside Boston in Waltham, Massachusetts, and focused mostly on business majors and business adjacent majors. So when I arrived at UMass Lowell, it is a large research university with several academic colleges across three physical campuses in a city. So the project management systems were different because the universities were very different. And the administrative setups were just different in each place. So each marketing communication team at each institution built the tool based on the interactions they were having with the appropriate stakeholders. We had a great start at Lowell based upon what I used at Bentley, but the core group project managers at Lowell, or what we referred to as that internal marketing communications agency at Lowell, really sat down together when we talked about how are we going to move projects forward now that we're a larger team. We had 45 people working on the marketing communications team there. So this was really identifying a need to move projects forward in an efficient manner. And we sat down and said, how can we build out this tool? So the way that Lowell built it out was that each college had a working area, and then the editorial and writing staff had a working area that was really based on the content budget. So what were the beat writers writing on? What was coming out from media relations? And enrollment marketing also had an area as well, just because there were so many projects flying in and out. But then there were certain stakeholders like graphic designers who didn't have a working area. They were touching a variety of different working areas in the system. So each person on the team sort of had a unique way to use it based on what their jobs were each day.
That's really cool. Did you say what the software was, or can you not say?
Oh, no, I'm happy saying it. So it was Trello. And Trello. It's that, so I really, I'm used to Trello. My comfort is there, but Bentley, we were using Basecamp. So Trello was new for me at the time, but it's, I find it, look, if you can use Facebook, you can use these tools. So they're all super, super easy to use. And Trello is the one that I've had at two institutions successfully. It's just pretty easy to use.
Yeah, I've used Basecamp a lot in my career. That's typically
I don't know if it's a video thing or if it's just, you know, but that's just typically what I've used at a previous company, and then what other clients, you know, I get pulled into their base camps sometimes. But I've heard of Trello too. But super, super helpful to have something like that to really keep everybody on the same page. And everybody's got a different way of kind of using it and sort of policing, you know, what goes where and stuff like that. But tell me about, like, you know, how this really helps cross-pollination and collaboration between different departments. Like, can you kind of explain a bit about how that worked?
Yeah, sure. Of course. Because work was divided into like groups, right? I kind of touched on that a little while ago. The appropriate people could stay on track with task completion and deadlines. So it's an easy way to just visually display all that's going on across the campus as far as marketing and communications is concerned. So, and it was also a phenomenal way for kind of that media and PR side of the house to work more closely with like the brand creative digital marketing team. So we weren't treated as separate working areas, you know, and then oftentimes you hear that, oh, that's the PR group, or oh, that's the marketing group. It was a way for us to kind of see what everybody was working on. You know, we would have regular meetings where everybody quickly touched base on what they were working on. But then if somebody said something in a meeting like, oh, I've got this story coming out, and I heard that in the meeting, I would go back with my enrollment marketing team and say, let's find that story that Jill is working on. I think it could really be useful for enrollment marketing. Let's put it into our comp plan. So it was just a way to take one piece of content and repackage it a variety of different times. So oftentimes the writers would be writing something. I would say this could work for enrollment marketing. We would then cut down the content, put it into the comp plan for the appropriate students that would like to receive that message. And then we would go ahead and push it out on social a few weeks later or a few days later. So you're hitting people with the same message over and over again. And you're also hitting various audiences with the same message. So you can have that kind of buzz hopefully take shape. And that was the beauty of it all.
That's cool. And that sort of like someone seeing something in multiple different platforms is really helpful. I noticed that about myself. About where I'm like, oh, maybe it's an event or something where it's like the first time I see it, I'm just like, whatever. But then, you know, I'll see it like maybe on TikTok or another channel, and it's like, okay, well, maybe it's something to consider. And then one of my friends is like, I'm going to this event, and I'm like, okay, now this is a legitimate thing. Like, it takes a few different a variety of touch points to kind of get someone to go, oh, maybe I should pay attention to this.
Right. Because then it's hardwired, right? Or like, for example, like if something is in the alumni magazine, it's not going to hit an enrollment audience, but maybe what you have is a mom reading it as an alum in the magazine. And then the student being like, I got this, like this story, there's something going on at, like, you know, this institution. And the mom's like, oh, I had that too. And then they have that conversation and they kind of talk about what they read, and they both read something similar, but it wasn't the same because it was tailored towards the specific audience. So that's kind of the goal in mind. And another thing that's really helpful with this is, you know, you can, again, break down silos. Like, for example, if there is a print view book, right, and you have your graphic designers and the content writer writing on that print view book, and everything is set and it goes out to press and the enrollment team is using that and it's beautiful, it's great to take all of those assets that were made on the creative side and then bring them to your digital team so that they can create a digital view book. And they're not starting from scratch, right? They're starting from a place where a project has already been implemented. And then they're just taking what the graphic designers did, and the digital graphic designers are now trying to use the same thing so that it looks exactly the same. It's the same experience, so that whether you have the physical printed piece in your hand or you're going on a digital viewbook on your laptop, it feels the same. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to start from scratch. And that's another thing. It saves you time. It saves you money. It saves you effort.
Yeah. And yeah, not starting from scratch every time and repurposing is huge. Saves a ton of money. And yeah, like you said, provides that cohesiveness kind of across the board.
Quick break here to tell you about a thing that all the cool higher ed marketers are doing. They've all subscribed to the Higher Ed Storytellers Digest. It's my weekly email newsletter where I unpack practical tips, insights, and inspiration for creating more emotionally resonant content for their institutions. And guess what? I think you're cool, and I want you on the list. Past newsletters have featured stuff like the anatomy of viral content, what makes a piece of content spread like wildfire. Also, examples of really compelling user-generated video content coming out of other institutions and getting a lot of traction on YouTube. We've also talked about how emotional content isn't just being sappy all the time. There's a variety of emotions that your content can speak to that can inspire a prospective student to take the next step with your institution. And so we've unpacked that. We've shared exclusive mini podcast episodes and bonus content that you can't get anywhere else but the newsletter. We've shared workflow tips for using AI to aid in content creation, all kinds of stuff that we unpack in this newsletter. And on more than one occasion, I've treated my entire list to free Starbucks. I make no promises, but just saying, it's been done twice. You'll also stay up to date on the latest episodes from this podcast. So if email is a better way for you to subscribe to a podcast, this is the way. So head over to unveiled.tv/newsletter and sign up. And when you sign up, you'll be given immediate access to all the previous editions of the newsletter so you can binge the various topics that we've touched on and links and resources we've shared, all that stuff. So do that. unveiled.tv/newsletter. Unveiled is spelled UNVEILD. Okay, back to the show.
This is an off topic, or sort of on topic, but off of my question list question.
Yeah, that's fine.
I always like to be respectful. I'll send you the questions. I know that people come prepared, and then I'm like, I'm always like thinking of like
no,
other things.
This is a conversation. Just don't trip me up. Don't you know.
So I was sitting in a presentation at the AMA did a virtual little conference or whatever for higher ed marketers. I was just sitting in there was like two presentations about digital asset management software and stuff like that. And when you said, you know, you're talking about like graphic design, other departments kind of using the same type of design assets. Did UMass Lowell have any sort of content management system or digital asset management system when it came to like photos or video clips and things like that? Or did you use Trello?
No, we did not use Trello. No. There was a digital asset management system for media, for videos and stills. So what we would do is, this is such an interesting conversation. You and I could totally geek out over this. We would take things out of the digital asset management tool and move them to kickstart a project. So for example, if like there was, this is totally random because you're throwing me a curveball here. Let's say that there was a accepted student event for early action students. So in New England, early action students are going to hear about whether they're admitted or not in the winter time. So we wouldn't want to take, we were very specific about going into the dam and getting winter shots across campus of students like with snowmen or having a snowball fight. Because if you're coming to school here in Massachusetts, you better like snow. And it was like, you want to embrace that. So we would go ahead and the project manager would say, here's the project. Here's how we're going to kickstart it. Here's the deadline. Here's the print run that we need. Here's the budget we need. Here's the list of people that are going to receive it, the mail list. And then I have curated a handful of images. Or the graphic designer might be able to pull those in once the designer on the project was identified, but they worked hand in hand. You can go ahead and put all those things into a Trello, but it's going to cost you a lot of money. So you should really only pull files over that you plan to use, because all these companies will start charging you more if you start to use them as a DAM.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So what were, you know, in terms of content creation, like how would a single story or a piece of content get repurposed and disseminated kind of like in various formats? Like say you had a I mean, we talk a lot about video on this podcast. Was, yeah. was there any sort of use case for video where then something got repurposed because some other department saw it?
Oh my gosh. Constantly. You know, video is king, constantly. So it was a really good way to kind of, for me, what I like to do is I like to take a video. I like to look at the personas, right? So the different personas across a campus, who are we trying to target, and take a look at the digital advertising. For me, the YouTube spots always had were strong converters. So I would go to our internal videographer and say, like, I have this B-roll. I need to cut it down to 15 seconds so that I can give it to our digital advertising agencies so they can run it on digital ads. So we would oftentimes just take a longer format and repurpose it. And what we would also do, going back to the seasons, is we would run those with different B-roll based on the season, so that if we were trying to follow a student and get them to apply and then get them to deposit and, like, think about the senior year of a student, we would go ahead and start doing those digital ads with videos or with stills, but have them repurposed several different times. And they were always from longer form videos or things like that. So.
Interesting. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the, and just following the seasons too, you know, because I think it's funny, like a lot of, you know, back in my corporate video days, a lot of clients would like when the leaves would start coming out and, you know, the sun was shining and stuff, like that's when they would want to film stuff, was like, when everything looked green and their best. But sometimes it helps to be intentional about, like, you know, actually let's get some winter shots in here. Let's get some snowmen.
Well, we don't want to shy away from it. You and I are both from areas of the country that have four distinct seasons. And it's one of those things where when we were trying to target students from California, we're not going, like, you better be pretty honest about the climate that they're coming to live in for the next 4 years or so of their life, because it's cold. Even though climate change has softened it a bit, it's cold, especially in Lowell. The Merrimack River is a monster of a river, and the wind is, you know, can be tough on days, and we have beautiful springs and absolutely amazing falls, but winter's a lot of fun too. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a lot of fun. You know, the mountains of New Hampshire aren't far from here, and, you know, so why shy away from it? You know, like, that's who we are as an institution, and that's who we collectively are as institutions in areas where there are four distinct seasons. So there, yeah, if we would always kind of look at the long range forecast, and if it looked like we were going to get a real whopper of a snowstorm, we would try to line up a photographer and get our videographer on campus over the weekend to see students in, play in the snow.
That's cool. I saw a while ago a video from, I think it's Middlebury College. And they had, it was just like this really simple video that a videographer had filmed of, like, students ice skating on this, I don't think it's a lake or something like that, with, like, mountains in the background. I'm like, I generally hate winter in Michigan, but, like, I love that. Like, I want that.
Yeah. I have a crush on Middlebury. Their content is amazing. So if anyone from Middlebury is listening, I love you all. You do great stuff.
We've had Andrew Castle. Well, he's no longer at Middlebury, but he's been on the podcast a couple times. Nice. And that's kind of how I got up to speed on their stuff. But you've got kind of a real specific example for a single piece of content. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is a really big point of pride for me. During a meeting with the Francis College of Engineering up at Lowell, I was meeting with the dean and the department chairs in, like, the spring of 22. And it was yield season, and kind of just one of my roles while I was there was really to help people across campuses, particularly the faculty, how they could support us with yield efforts. What could they do? Like, so talking to them about yield, talking to them about Gen Z and what Gen Z really looks for and that type of thing. So I was sitting down with them and providing them that synopsis on Gen Z and how to help us, and really talking about how Gen Z craze authenticity. And Professor Ed Hyduk just shared a story during the meeting about a student who lost his way while he was grieving the unexpected loss of a fellow classmate and his best friend. So it was the student basically decided to hike the Appalachian Trail and had never prepped for it, just like went out on the Appalachian Trail, which the thought of that, I can't even imagine. But Ed and another professor encouraged him and then went ahead and like plotted his journey on the trail and met him a couple times and cooked dinner for him, like, you know, while he was on the trail in various places. And it really helped the student process his grief. It's not a happy story, okay? But it's darn authentic. And it really took a look at the mental health conversation that we're having across the nation and across the world right now. And it said, here's how we're doing this at Lowell head on. And here's how we are, you know, even though Lowell is a very large university, it showcased that our faculty gets to know the student and mentors them in a variety of different ways. So I had this meeting and I went back and I spoke to our director of editorial services, Sarah Corbett, told her about this and pitched the idea to her. And she wrote the most beautiful story for the alumni magazine. It is so good. And I'm happy to share a link with you if you'd like to share it with folks after today. And then we went ahead and we put that into the communication plans for our undergraduate audiences and their parents to see so that we could say, like, we care about the students, we care about the mental health of your child. And we went ahead and used it in a variety of different ways. So it really had this beautiful ripple effect. It was authentic and solemn, but had a really wonderful ending and that we were all proud of at the institution.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it was good.
I love the focus on mental health, that there seems to be a big uptick in that. Like I mentioned in that AMA presentation that I watched, Josie Alquist did a good presentation on marketing from the heart and things like that. And she showcased a couple of schools that were really focusing on like creating content around mental health. And it's like, man, that is so needed. Like it's so good. It's so necessary.
Yeah, it's definitely important. And Lowell was something called the JED, a JED campus. So they were really focused on the well-being and the mental health of students. I remember years ago, even before the pandemic, we were talking about this. And I think the pandemic just made us take a really good look as leaders in higher education at the mental health crisis. And that's a good thing for all of us.
For sure. So let's talk about this concept of, internal agency versus being a short order cook. So this is something that you and I talked about on our pre-call. Like, how did you ensure project requests that came in were on brand and things like that?
Yeah, I think that a lot of places, marketing communications teams are still thought of as the people who make the posters that hang around campus. Or if you need pens, you go to the marketing team and they'll buy your pens, they'll get your pens for you with the logo on them. And that's short order cook type of work. And today's sophisticated higher education marketers do not have time to focus on things like that. Their jobs are to be strategists and stewards of the brand. A project request form is a great way to see what people across campus need, but that doesn't necessarily mean that every single request coming in needs to be taken on. Templatizing things is a great way to give people the support they need. And you can have a quick how-to guide online. So if somebody in another department needs stationery or thank you cards, there's a template, there's a library of templates for them to select from. Or if they need some sort of giveaway, For Imprint can make a page that's institution specific. So you can drive the person to the page and say, here are the curated items that we recommend that you purchase. And then that person can empower themselves to go and use their pro card and purchase those things appropriately. And then that way, the marketing communications team can focus on really making sure brand is sound, mm-hmm. and they can make sure that the needle is moving in the right direction and that senior leadership and the board is pleased because the strategic vision of the institution is being upheld.
Yeah. And there's a tool that I love when it comes to templatizing processes and things like that. And it's called Loom. I don't know if you've ever used Loom, but it's like a screen record. And this is, you know, not an advertisement for Loom, but it's just generally like one of my favorite tools of all time. And
really?
I use it almost every day. It's Loom, L-O-O-M. And it records your screen, and you can just, and it's just basically a web-based version of recording your screen and going click by click and being able to talk through what you're doing. So like, okay, go on for imprint. You're going to log in here. You're going to click here. And then you're going to, here's our template. Here's the file. You're going to get whatever. You're going to upload it like this.
I'm writing this down.
It's so quick to empower people like that. And I've onboarded a couple of virtual assistants who actually manage this podcast. And the biggest way that like got them up to speed was these Loom videos. I'm like, here, watch me edit one episode of this podcast. Wow. Go do what I did. And then like, here, watch me like create the landing page for this episode. And then, okay, now you can do it on your own. Cause you can just always just refer back to the click by click, you know, of what I was doing. Anyway, I just think that, you know, for a project management type thing, that's just a tool that I get excited about. And there's a free version of it. There's also, I think I pay like $20 a month for it because I use it all the time.
Well worth the $20.
Yeah, for sure. So like when project requests that weren't a fit for the internal agency, approach to handle directly, how did you still support those departments while empowering them to kind of execute those projects themselves?
Yeah, I think the biggest example of that is, you know, a lot of project requests come in asking for event support in the form of a videographer or a photographer. And, you know, everybody wants to have a photographer or videographer at their event. But from, if you look back to the brand and being stewards of the brand and being an internal agency, oftentimes those images, you know, they're not compelling. It's somebody behind a podium giving a speech, or, you know, maybe it's somebody, you know, with a display board behind them, but you really can't understand what they're doing and the display board's a little weird, and you want to support them because it's important to have their voices be heard and not for external partners to feel like their events aren't important, because they are. So one thing that you can do is, if your videographer or photographer has the time to go to the event, then great, send them. But know that you're probably not going to get a lot of use out of what the content they're curating during that event. It's just not going to transfer well to alumni magazines and view books and yada, yada. Mm-hmm. So, you know, digital ads. But if they don't have the time to attend these events, then having a short list of partners in the region who are on a retainer, and you can say to the external partner, we're unable to support this event, but here are our, external partners that we use. And they can coordinate, the marketing team can either coordinate that on behalf of the requester, or the requester can go ahead and reach out to those individuals on their own. It can happen either way, whatever the university feels is better for their institution. So, and then the images should always be in the video. The raw footage should always be available to the marketing communications team, just in case there is something that can be pulled.
Yeah, that's good. And I also think that like having some sort of, you know, back to our discussion about a template, like having some sort of like, if someone can just do it on their iPhone, like what kind of shots would the marketing team actually make use of? Is it a wide shot of the crowd listening to the person that's talking from the podium, or is it people enjoying the food at the event or whatever? I remember I did photography for the city I live in, city of Troy. I used to be the photographer for the city on a contract basis. And those were like regular conversations I had with them, was like, I'm going to these events, but like, what are you actually going to put in the newspaper? Like, let me focus on that.
No. And that's like literally the same conversation happening everywhere, right? Like, what do you want with, like, so we're taking these pictures, but what's the end goal? Right. So, yeah, it's important to have those conversations.
Yeah. Cool. Let's see. And then we had talked about the role of project managers kind of collaborating with different offices to understand their goals up front and, you know, find existing assets that could meet their needs. Yeah. Did you have any thoughts about that?
Oh, yeah. Big time. So, you know, without a kickoff meeting, the external constituents need to be heard. The project manager needs to ask questions and understand what the goals are. Without that kind of kickoff, the project can't be properly addressed and needs most likely won't be met. So I know that's a bold statement, but I've just lived it and I feel it's true. So I'm standing behind that statement. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a long meeting. You know, if it's something you've done before, pick up the phone, you know, team somebody and be like, hey, is this similar to what we did last year? Good. You just want me to refresh maybe some images and stuff? Great. But make sure you get that affirmative to move forward. If it's a larger project, then yeah, have a quick kickoff meeting. Spitball some ideas with the people at the table. And that's just how to do things effectively. It also showcases that marketing communications are good campus partners. And it also brings it back to, we're the internal agency and we are the experts. So it is important beyond the project. It's really important to demonstrate to the campus community who you are as marketing communication individuals and as a team. So it's also good to really establish the actual due date. You know, if somebody wants a huge piece in 2 weeks, well, that's not realistic. You know, here's what you can get in 2 weeks. Or if you want the original request, here's how long it's realistically going to take. So just getting all that up front is vital, and getting the budget you know, that type of thing. It's really important for everyone involved.
Yeah. There's project management, there's so many like random tasks I feel like that fly around that don't have hard, like the project might have a due date, but this sort of like, oh, by the way, can you get back to this person or can you do this? Like usually it's just sort of like, it'll get done if the person remembers to get it done or something like that. I had an old boss that was really hard on us about that. And he would say, when I ask you to do something, I want you to ask me when I would like that done by. I make him sound really, he's a super, super fun, nice guy. I make him sound like a militant dictator. Nice. But it really did bring order to stuff. 'Cause there was always stuff, like a client would email him about something, he'd forward it. And then we'd be busy like doing, you know, making videos and like doing all this other stuff, that no one would like pick it up. Like no one would, you know, he would kind of forward it to like three people and be like, someone handle this. and no one would, like, everyone thought the other person was going to handle it. No one really knew how priority it was. So he was like almost like, just like for his, my, like speaking from his, like for his own like development, he's like, remind me to tell you when I need this done by, you know, cause you know, he's on to the next thing real quick too. So, no, it's funny. So for marketing leaders, looking to kind of move away from this, being order takers and strengthen their, you know, brands, what mindset shifts or, you know, what kind of key steps would you recommend for them?
I mean, acting like an agency. And what I mean by that is showcasing that the team are truly the experts in the field. And that's going to be good for cross-campus buy-in, but also something that's just so smart and works is, I'm a firm believer that the approval of a project should be kept to 3 rounds or less. And we actually had a sign-off sheet at both Bentley and Lowell that if you had round one, you had round two, and you have round three. And if round three, if things weren't finalized and ready to go and either to press or out in the wilds, it's the duty of the project manager to sit down with the project requester from the external office and say, like, feels like there could be a breakdown here. Mm-hmm. And that kickoff meeting, what did we miss? Do we need to go back? And then have that conversation, identify a new timeline because your timeline is now blown. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that should happen few and far between. That three rounds, if you have a kickoff meeting that's correct, the three rounds should be fine. And oftentimes you don't even need all three rounds, but that's how you keep, that's how you close projects out in the PM system. That's how you keep things on task. So your completion rate and your time to completion is sound. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, that's great. That's in the video making process. That's what takes the longest is the revisions.
Oh yeah, the back people and would forth,
be like,
right?
Yeah, people would be like, you know, in this my corporate video days, a client, it seemed like they always needed something yesterday, and it'd be like, can we get this done in 2 weeks? And we're like, well, yeah, we can film it and probably edit it, but how long is it going to take to get through all your people's approval process? That's the big question.
Right. Well, and I'll say, John, another thing too, we had one person. Okay. So it wasn't, so I'm just going to, like, if it was one college, let's say it was the College of Arts and Sciences that needed something, the person putting the project request in was the person doing the final approval. And it was their job to go to all the stakeholders within their school to showcase the piece and to gather feedback. Because the worst thing is when you have like five people editing mm-hmm. a PDF. That is like, no, don't do it. Like, do not do that. You have one person gathering the information, your external partner, they're marking up the PDF, they're sending it back to you, the project manager, and then you're working it through to make sure it's good so that before your graphic designers dive in and start editing things, they can freaking understand what they're supposed to be editing, right? You know, I mean, that's where the breakdown happens if you don't have that buttoned up.
Yeah. I'm laughing because all of this applies so much to my,
I know it does.
You know, my career as a videographer, because like, the worst thing, not the worst thing, but like a really annoying thing for videographers is when a client will comment on something with a question that the videographer does not have the power to answer. Like, it's
exactly.
Like, this is your, tell me what to do. Like, what, like, I'm not going to be the one to go talk to your president and ask him if this should be blue or red. Like, you know. Well,
and the worst thing for creatives is when you work on something and work on it and work on it because the communication has just spiraled, right? And all these people are getting involved and you finally get it over the finish line and you're like, ah. Oh. Great. I think five people are going to watch that. Or, oh, that ad's going to be out once. You know, like, I'm so glad I spent the last 6 weeks of my professional life on that one print ad that's going to go in the Sunday paper one time. Like, right. Nobody wants that. That's not a win. That is not a win for anyone involved.
Mm-hmm. In Detroit, the big topic of conversation right now is we got, like, our version of a Hollywood sign.
Ah.
Like, it says Detroit on, like, one of these freeways. And everyone had these big ideas, like all the general public had these big ideas of what this would look like. And, oh, like this is going to look like this Hollywood sign. It's going to be a cool design. It's going to be like, it's going to light up, whatever. Like everyone kind of had their vision and what it turned out to be was just like so boring and small.
Yeah.
And
because like, everybody watered it down.
Yeah.
Right?
And then I see posts coming out about like, this is what design by committee looks like.
Yep.
You know,
this
is the safest, least offensive thing that we could do. Nobody loves it, but none of the leadership hates it. So
we've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all been there. And it's like, ugh, it's fine.
Yeah.
We get the project done and everybody's happy. Everybody got their say, but those aren't the ones that are winning awards, right? Those are the projects that are just done and you're glad to be done with them.
Yeah, absolutely. So whenever we're implementing a new tool, I mean, buy-in is huge. I mean, they're like, people don't like change. And so tell me what are some of your thoughts around, getting leadership to buy into this tool?
It's not even just leadership. It's also the people using the tool. Buy-in is critical. And if you don't have it and there's drastic resistance to evolving or improving the project management within the office, it will fail. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this firsthand because I have successfully implemented this type of system at two universities, but I was not successful at a third. And it's one of those things where you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force them to drink. So project management tools are extremely easy to use and people should not have difficulty learning them. So anyone who claims that they will, it's just not true. But they're built with a wide variety of audiences in mind and the ease is apparent. But if there are some people who simply do not want to change mm-hmm. how they do their job, and if they resist enough, this will become a huge headache for everyone. And, you know, I tried to implement a tool before and it was unsuccessful. And if somebody says, well, we can do that alternatively, if we, you know, we don't need the out of the box PM tool, but if the alternative is a bear to implement, mm-hmm. And it's a bear to outfit, then no one will use it and it will just make everyone frustrated. So going back to the same old that folks are familiar with is not ideal, but it's better than forcing something down someone's throat when they don't want it. And I've experienced that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a executive leader at University of Michigan. I listened to a talk of his once and he was like, the biggest barrier to organizational change, because he was talking to a group of HR professionals. Yeah. The biggest barrier to organizational change is cultural resistance. He's like,
yes,
he's like,
I need to listen to that.
He's like, it's just this idea that this is not how we do things around here. And like, that is the number one barrier that prevents anything good from happening in an organization.
Right. Well, and it's tough because, you know, in this one instance, I was brought on to do new things and it was, you know, it's tough. If you don't have that buy-in and the cultural resistance is there, you're not going to do anything. So, you know, I that was a learning experience for me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's like, what's the cost of this getting done? Like, let's not think about how annoying or not annoying it is to implement. Like, what's the likelihood that if we don't do this, that the outcome will actually still be achieved, you know, with your alternative way of doing things? Because oftentimes people don't embrace a new way of doing things and they're like, well, I'll just cobble something together kind of like that over here. And then, you know, you check in with them later and it's not done. It's like,
of course it is. And when you cobble anything, it's not going to get done. And I think that, you know, yeah, you can't we don't need that. We'll just cobble it together. No, it's like, just stop. Just go back to how you were doing it. And these goals that you've set forth, well, you know, let's see if they get accomplished.
Yeah,
the cobble absolutely is the worst.
Reject the cobble. okay. Well, this has been great, Kristen. Thanks so much for sharing your organizational wisdom with us. As I mentioned, you know, I think we geek out on this stuff more than more than we get credit for, especially as creatives. I'm like, somebody please put some structure in place here. my worst nightmare is like a really unorganized Google Drive. Like, oh, you just
like a haystack, right?
It's just like an explosion of, because like every time you create a document, it throws it into Google, into like the random bucket of Google Drive. So like, oh, it's organization is like a whole other topic. I'm constantly fighting with my own Google Drive because I'm like, I just organized this yesterday. Now it's just like a landmine went off in here again.
That's so funny.
But where can people connect with you at?
I'm active on LinkedIn. So just Kristen Nichols or Nichols Higher Education. Anyone who wants to connect with me or send me a message to, you know, get to know me or throw a question my way, I'm happy to connect.
And tell us a little bit about your consulting work too, while we're at it. What kind of clients do you work with?
I've been doing consulting for several years now, but it's my primary focus right now and has been for about the last 6 months or so, and it's been exciting. So working in a variety of different fashions based on what the institutional needs are. So doing a lot of brand strategy, market research, content development, and also available for fractional CMO roles for smaller institutions, and also working as a project manager between external partners hired and internal stakeholders. So for a variety of different things, depending on what the institution needs.
Awesome. Yes. To our listeners, if you're looking for any of that, go talk to Kristen. I would hire you if I owned a college.
Likewise. You know? Likewise.
So, yeah, it's been great getting to know you over the past couple months. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening. Three things I want to give you before you go. Number one, reminder to sign up for my free weekly newsletter all about creating content that resonates emotionally with your audience. And you can do that at unveiled.tv/newsletter. Unveiled is spelled UNVEILD. Number two, if you've enjoyed this episode, share it with someone. Share it with your team, your boss, your dog, whatever. And if you're not already subscribed, I'd love for you to do that. Number three, reach out to me. If you have comments, questions, you want to talk about a video project, whatever, my email is john@unveiled.tv. John is spelled J-O-H-N. Or follow me on LinkedIn. If you're searching for me, my last name is spelled A-Z-O-N-I. That's all for today, and I look forward to catching you on the next episode of the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast. Thanks.